This is Ozarks at Large for Friday, June 6th, 2014. I'm Kyle Kellums. Walton Arts Center presents the 14th Annual Art of Wine Festival, June 12th through the 14th. This three-evening event features a winemaker's dinner and two different tastings, over 400 wines from around the world, and food from area restaurants. Art of Wine tickets and information available at waltonartcenter.org or 443-5600. Science is big at Fayetteville Public Library this summer, and all ages can sign up for the reading program. FPL Summer begins with a petting zoo featuring Barnyard Buddies Monday. It continues with an author talk and workshop with playwright Karen Zacharias on June 11th and 12th, and a beer-making workshop takes place June 14th. More information available at faylib.org. Ahead on this busy Friday on Ozarks, from Pharrell to Harry Connick Jr., celebrities hit the stage this morning in Fayetteville for the Walmart shareholders meeting. Plus, there were a few business items, too. Antoinette Grajeda and Timothy Dennis were inside Bud Walton Arena. We'll get a report later. And Jacqueline Froelich takes us along the Buffalo River nearly a year after a controversial hog farm operation began business. First, Bud Walton Arena was filled and traffic was at a standstill early this morning on Razorback Road as thousands of Walmart shareholders and employees attended the company's annual shareholders meeting. Despite the 7 a.m. start time, the festivities were energetic. Musicians Pharrell and Harry Connick Jr. opened the meeting that also included addresses from the new CEO, Doug McMillon, and the chair of the board of directors, Rob Walton.
Dad believed that as long as we think and feel like our customers, as long as we're truly customer-centric, customer-driven, there's no limit to how much we can achieve as a company.
There were also requests for changes from select shareholders.
Our proposal asks Walmart to annually disclose whether it clawed back bonuses or other performance pay from senior executives who have broken the law or violated Walmart's policies on ethical conduct. It's a concept important enough that companies like Halliburton, Northrop Grumman, United Technologies, and McKesson already have policies for these disclosures.
We'll have more from the meeting in a few minutes. A possible election to increase the Fort Smith library tax from 1 mill to 3 mills is closer to reality. The Fort Smith Board of Directors will meet Tuesday at noon to consider a petition asking for the increase. The petition, with the required 100 signatures, was filed with the mayor's office yesterday. If the board approves an election, the measure would be in front of city voters in August. One of the most accomplished golfers in University of Arkansas history is turning professional. Emily Tubert is a three-time All-American as a Razorback and was the 2010 Women's Amateur Public Links champion. Though her Arkansas career is over, she will be back in Northwest Arkansas to participate in the Walmart Northwest Arkansas Championship LPGA event later this summer. The Northwest Arkansas Naturals dropped a 6-4 game to Tulsa last night in Springdale. The two teams finished their series tonight at Arvest Ballpark beginning at 7. There is a good chance of showers and thunderstorms in the region before the end of the weekend. 40% chance of rain tonight with lows from the mid-60s to lower 70s. Tomorrow, 50% chance of rain, highs from 83 to 89. And for Sunday, 70% chance of rain with highs from 75 to 80.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda, and I am inside Bud Walton Arena on the University of Arkansas campus in Fayetteville, where this morning the 2014 Walmart shareholders meeting took place. I am joined now by Michael Tilley, the editor and publisher of the City Wire, which covers business, politics, news, and much more for the KUAF listening area. Thank you for joining me.
That's quite a mouthful, Antoinette. I'm glad to be here. It was an interesting shareholders meeting, that's for sure.
Well, this was my first shareholders meeting, and you've been to a couple. How many have you been to?
Three. I think this is the third. So far, it's as we said on the CityWire before, it's kind of a mixture between a music festival and a church rally and a pep rally and a little bit of everything, and they even try to conduct some business while they're here. But it's always interesting to see who they bring to town, and it's interesting to see how Walmart continues to focus on their customer. And with this one, I was curious how they were going to come through, because they've had, as Charles Hawley, the chief financial officer, talked about, they've had a very difficult year financially, and the next fiscal year isn't looking to be stellar either. So, but it, you know, I think Walmart, the execs and their scripting and their entertainment did a good job to kind of divert us from that to the technology changes and their customer-centric model and those type of things. So, but at the end of the day, Walmart still has to perform financially.
And you bring up having a rough year. They did mention, you know, it was a rough year, but they did seem to have some good numbers to pull out and share with people.
Well, they always do. I mean, yeah, they talked about adding $68 billion in income over the past 5 years, $50 billion in market value. And, yes, those are excellent numbers. 90% of the companies out there would love to have those type of numbers. But at the same time, you know, I guess I should back up a little bit. You know, we shouldn't worry. Walmart's not going to go bankrupt anytime soon, okay? They're doing well. But at the same time, Walmart has always performed so well that they've created this expectation out there. So when they have, for example, the five quarter, where they've had five very tough quarters, especially in their U.S. comp sales. So when they get on that kind of string, you know, Walmart doesn't have the luxury because, again, they've set such a positive history of earnings. They often don't get the luxury of being able to play those down. People want to know, with Walmart, a lot of it is, what have you done for me lately?
So how does this compare to previous meetings that you have been to?
Well, you know, in terms of performers, they still haven't brought in AC/DC, so it still doesn't live up to my expectations. But seriously, I mean, you know, I didn't expect Pharrell Williams, that's a big name, Robin Thicke. Of course, I didn't expect that song to be played at a shareholder, Blurred Lines at a shareholders meeting, but, I liked the song, it was good. But good mix of entertainment. I am a big Harry Connick Jr. fan from the old school, from his big band days, so I'm a little biased. I may not be a good person to ask, but in terms of just looking at it from just attending for the performance, you know, again, Walmart knocked it out of the – of course, they have the resources, too, but they knocked it out of the park, and, or out of the arena, I guess, in this example.
Yes, out of the arena. Now, they did talk about some things coming later this year, and I know they sort of hinted at some stuff with Walmart U.S. Any idea or any speculation about what that might be?
Well, you know, they've hinted a lot, especially on their what they talk about bringing their products and service to where the customer is. You know, we've already seen them do some of that with this drive-in grocery concept in Bentonville. I'm not going to be surprised to hear them later this year announce, or even softly announce, that Bentonville, the Northwest Arkansas area, could be another experiment for their tethering concept, where they tie stores together where, you know, Antoinette, you order something, and then you go pick it up. Say you live in Centerton, you order it, and then say you can go pick it up in your super center on your way to Centerton or whatever. I mean, I'm not going to be surprised if they announce that. But in terms of other things, I was very interested. I don't think they'll do this anytime soon, but when Doug McMillon talked about 3D printing, where you could go to a store and pick up some small replacement part for, I mean, I don't know what, a vacuum cleaner or whatever, but you can get that printed. You can get that part manufactured by a 3D printer at Walmart. So the fact that Walmart's looking at that, and I have a feeling there is a laundry list of things that they're tinkering with in their innovation labs that they're not talking about, but we'll see some of those. But the 3D printing was impressive.
All right. Well, Michael, as always, thank you for talking to us on Friday. Excited to see you in person for once instead of just on the phone.
All right. Thanks, Antoinette. My pleasure.
Michael Tilley is the editor and publisher of The City Wire, which covers business, politics, news, and much more for the KUAF listening area.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. This morning's Walmart shareholders meeting was part pep rally, part earnings report, and for about 10 minutes, a forum for a call to action by three separate shareholders. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda was in attendance this morning. She's in the media room now. Antoinette, your first shareholders meeting.
Yes, my first one. I've helped a little bit from your end, but this is the first time I've actually been on the floor.
So what are your first impressions?
It is every bit the spectacle I have grown to know that it would be. There were 5,000 associates from 27 different countries, all very excited for so early in the morning, but they were there with their t-shirts representing their countries and having these kind of glowing headdresses that lighting up blue and green, and just very excited to be there.
it was certainly an A-list of entertainers that paraded across the stage.
It was. Everybody knows, anybody familiar with shareholders knows that the entertainment is always a big topic of conversation. Harry Connick Jr. was the host this year, and we had performances by Pharrell and Robin Thicke, Sarah McLachlan, Florida Georgia Line, and Aloe Black closed down the meeting.
All right, everybody. Put your hands together. Feeling my way through the dark.
Well, the business part of the meeting was spread out among the entertainment, and there were six proposals that shareholders had put up. Three were sort of, approval of the 14 boards of directors, approval of Ernst & Young as the independent accountants. But there were three proposals made by three separate shareholders that called for more accountability, from what these people thought should be more accountability and more transparency. None of those passed, though, did they?
They did not. There were three separate proposals. The first was to replace Rob Walton with an independent chair of the board, and each one was information was read by an individual in the crowd. The one who talked about this woman was mentioned that she's an associate, but she's worked at Walmart for 8 years and makes less than $25,000, and so she sort of wove that into her pitch about that particular proposal. The second proposal was to adopt a clawback disclosure policy. Well, they do have clawback policies, they want to have a disclosure of that. And the third was they were calling for an annual report on lobbying expenditures.
We are concerned that Walmart may be putting money behind policies that harm the company's image, threaten its bottom line, and compromise the value of its shares. For example, some of Walmart's sales come from food stamps used by both Walmart associates and customers. We need to know if the company's lobbying efforts supported food stamp cuts that led to lower sales. Is Walmart lobbying on minimum wage increases, either directly or indirectly, through trade associations?
Yes, it was interesting that that final proposal was asking to find out, was Walmart doing any lobbying to raise the minimum wage? From that shareholder's perspective, was Walmart doing things to help or hurt some of the lower paid employees?
Right. And of course, lots of numbers. They like to report on how they've done in the last year and so, and they reported a record of $473 billion in sales in the previous fiscal year. Kind of the overarching message for this shareholders meeting, I think, was integrating that digital and physical shopping experience. You know, they discussed a bit about using data to personalize your shopping. They used an example of someone, buying an iPad at Sam's Club and how they can, track the data and what they've bought. And they see that they also buy food there, but they've never bought blueberries, so they've sent them a message, well, your friend here has bought blueberries, and they reviewed it favorably. So just kind of that targeted marketing and things like that. They did discuss global e-commerce, which is actually a third of the sales growth at Walmart. It's the fastest growing division in the company. One of the interesting technological pieces that they're working on and that they will roll out later this year is something called Savings Catcher. They've tested this in 7 markets and they've had 1 million receipts scanned. And the way this works is, for a long time, Walmart has had the policy that the matching policy, if you bring in a printed ad of a local company for the same thing at a lower price, they'll give you the difference. They will give you at that same price. So now, what this Savings Catcher will do is you can log your receipt and it will scan for local ads. And if it finds something that's matching and there's a difference in price, a lower price, they will give you the difference on a gift card. And so they're planning on rolling that out later this year. They've been testing it across the country. And they said they had something very similar that they've been using in the UK for some time now. Also important today was Doug McMillon, the CEO and president of Walmart. It was his first shareholders meeting as president and CEO.
I've enjoyed this week getting to meet quite a few of you. And as I step up here this morning, I'm reminded of all the associates that I've met around the world. And for me, what sticks with me is the pride that you take in serving our customers.
He did note that his first shareholders meeting, because he did start as an associate and kind of worked his way up over the years, was in 1984. He helped decorate the Bentonville High School gymnasium for the shareholders meeting that year.
Yes, it was his first as CEO, and his first appearance on the morning was right after Pharrell sang that ubiquitous song, Happy. And Doug McMillon was in the crowd. He was talking and introducing the associates. He struck a very folksy appearance for his first meeting as CEO.
He did. He was in the crowd meeting some associates and took a selfie with some of them. Of course, he took this selfie with a group of them after one gentleman who was wearing an Alabama Crimson Tide hat and said that that was not allowed in Bud Walton Arena.
And then at the end, of course, Doug McMillon, when he came on for his formal address, he was very focused on what was going to happen in the future, especially with digital and technological advancements.
Yes, he said it was really important to focus on where they are now and where they're going. He says we need to do what we're doing now better, and then what's next. You know, we need to work on innovations and make sure that, you know, we're improving as quickly as we can, and we're doing, you know, we're innovating new things and making new ways to serve our customers better in the future.
I am excited about our future. There are so many new ways to serve our customers. Technology, data, and information are opening new doors for us to lead through. Our purpose of saving people money will always be relevant, but we'll do it in new ways. A few core principles will guide our direction. First, we will be a customer-driven company. We've always said our customer is the boss, and we'll make decisions based on how we can serve them better. Second, we're going to invest in our people. As we change and grow, it will be our associates who will make the difference. It'll be you. And finally, we need to be at the forefront of innovation and technology.
Well, it was an early morning and a long morning. I appreciate the work that you and Timothy Dennis have done helping us cover this year's shareholders meeting.
Absolutely. Happy to do it.
Thank you, Antoinette.
Thank you, Kyle.
In about 16 minutes, why architecture's loss was Wakarusa's gain.
I got a scholarship to study architecture and was going to do that, and then got really disillusioned with that. And then I worked at a farm, and then I worked at a cider distillery. Good jobs, but it wasn't a good fit at the time, I think. And then I worked in a little grocery store in New York, and then I got fired from that. And then I just sort of started wandering around, and music just sort of happened to be at the right place at the right time.
Caroline Rose performed at the music festival on Mulberry Mountain last night. Before that, she talked to Antoinette Grajeda inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio and played some music, too. That's ahead on OAL. And the 6th Annual KUAF Fulbright Chamber Music Festival completes its 2014 season tonight in the Great Hall at Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art. Beginning at 7:30 tonight, the U of A music faculty and guest artists will perform The Quality of Luminescence with the String Quartet by Maurice Ravel and quintets for clarinet and strings by Cockerham and Brahms. Reservations are required for tonight's free event. FulbrightSummerMusic.uark.edu for more information.
Space tourism is almost here.
We would love to be able to see all sorts of people having the chance to experience space.
And it's not just about going up. It's about coming back down.
Because at 18,000 miles an hour, you can get to pretty well anywhere on Earth in about 40 minutes.
I'm Guy Raz, Richard Branson, Bill Ford, and others on the future of travel. That's next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
Sundays at noon on 91.3 FM.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. C&H Hog Farms, located on the Buffalo National River watershed, has been in operation for almost a year now. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich takes us to an Ozarks homestead a mile downstream to illustrate why the swine breeding factory remains controversial.
Big Creek cascades down a rocky forested gorge past the Fowler homestead northwest of Mount Judy. Sitting at the kitchen table, Jewel Greenhall Fowler says her family has maintained this place for centuries.
So my great-grandparents homesteaded this, and I'd say somewhere in the early 1700s, we always had clean water to drink. We always have a little spring right up here.
This historic homestead is less than a mile from a new swine breeding factory farm. And daughter Pam Fowler says the smell is horrific.
And it varies. Sometimes it's in the morning, sometimes it's all day long, sometimes it's in the evening. It's just, I can't describe how awful it is. We can't go outside.
C&H Hog Farms was permitted by the Arkansas Department of Environmental Quality in late 2012 to house up to 6,500 swine, a mix of sows, piglets, and boars, into what's called a confined feeding animal operation, CAFO for short. And Jewel Fowler says she's never heard tell of such tight quarters and doesn't like it. Mount Judy's a tight-knit community where dissent is discouraged.
I'm just like an onion in a petunia patch because I'm the only one that's against it because people around here were poor. There's no jobs around here. And they thought that, you know, if there's an opportunity for this guy to make money.
C&H Hog Farm owner Jason Henson, under contract with Cargill, opened up his new hog breeding complex last spring to media. Perpetually pregnant sows are confined to concrete floor barns, to narrow metal gestation and later lactation crates. Weaned piglets are shipped off to be fattened and slaughtered. At capacity, the factory can generate up to 2 million gallons of sewage a year, held in storage lagoons and sprayed on a constellation of nearby farm fields. One field is close to Mount Judy's public school, says Pam Fowler.
You know, the teachers there say that they smell it all the time. A lot of days they can't take the kids out to recess because it smells so horrible.
Odors are not regulated by the Arkansas Department of Environmental Quality, and swine farms, studies show, emit hydrogen sulfide, ammonia, and particulate, which can cause eye irritation, nausea, and headache. Children with asthma can also be affected. But to many farmers, that's the smell of money. Hog and poultry waste are routinely spread on farm fields in Arkansas to grow pasture to feed cattle. Even Big Creek is changing, Pam Fowler says. The rocks are slimier and green algae blooms clump in the crystalline water.
Now when I go down there to wade, I think, is it really safe to be in this water?
That's why the Fowler family has allowed experts like UA geoscientist emeritus Dr. Van Brahana to come sample the creek. They worry it's also polluting the Buffalo National River, which is about 5 miles downstream. This hot June morning, Dr. Van Brahana paddles the Buffalo National River beneath blazing blue skies. While negotiating a bend of swift water, he talks about the water quality monitoring he's conducting.
The analyses themselves are being run at no charge by Joe Nix down at Ouachita Baptist University. I'm doing all of the sampling, the dye tracing at no charge. And we have a variety of students. We have a variety of retirees, spectacular individuals who are passionate about this river.
Big Creek Basin samples taken prior to the farm going online were free of excess nutrients and pathogens, he said. So that baseline exists now. And to prove just how quickly contaminants can move through Ozark's karst, fractured subsurface limestone, sandstone, and shale, Dr. Rahana conducted non-toxic dye tracing in March.
And we got very fast velocities.
The National Park Service is also monitoring Big Creek Basin, and a team of UA researchers funded by the state legislature are sampling the watershed as well.
They are tied to the agriculture department, so I personally feel that it's appropriate to have a group that does not have that tie, that is collecting similar type information, and that represents us.
This spring, high levels of E. coli were documented in the basin, either kicked up by turbulence or traced to the swine farm. No one knows yet. That's why Brahana's team will next attempt to source track it using state-of-the-art genetic methods. Out of the gate, C&H Hog Farms has been plagued with problems. According to ADEQ compliance records, the sewage lagoons, permitted to leak as many as 5,000 gallons per day, show chronic liner cracks and erosion. Spray fields were not clearly mapped to protect riparian buffer zones or steep embankments, and a carcass management plan was not in place. In response, owner Jason Henson said problems have been addressed. He also demanded requested portions of that report be redacted from public view. They were not. Paddling down the Buffalo, Dr. Vambrahana is surrounded by a media flotilla armed with cameras and microphones, coordinated by the National Parks Conservation Association, which works to protect our nation's national parks. And wading into the gravelly river on a break, Emily Jones, senior program manager over the Southeast region, has strong opinions regarding the new swine CAFO on the Buffalo.
There's a lot of places where these things are much more appropriate. This kind of farming might be more appropriate, but the watershed of a national park, a national river, America's first national river, is just not the most appropriate location, so we'd like to see it moved out of this watershed.
The National Parks Service Conservation Association has formed a coalition with several local and state groups, including the Arkansas Canoe Club and the newly formed Buffalo River Watershed Alliance, which counts 1,000 members.
Our goals are to shut down CNH Hog Farm and stop any future CAFOs in the Buffalo River watershed.
President Gordon Watkins said with legal support from Earth Justice, they filed a federal lawsuit challenging the U.S. Department of Agriculture Farm Service Agency and U.S. Small Business Administration for their inadequate review and improper authorization of a $2.4 million loan guarantee to CNH Hog Farms.
We're seeking a revocation of the loan guarantees would be the ultimate outcome. This would not necessarily close the swine operation. We've known that from the beginning, but this is strictly challenging the loan guarantees that the federal government provided. And it's on the basis that there was an inadequate environmental assessment done, that it's really was kind of a slapdash job by the FSA, and the SBA just sort of accepted their work.
Gordon Watkins is a proponent of sustainable community-based agriculture, and in contrast, he says, the farm startup was conducted behind closed doors.
That's, I think, in large part due to an inadequate requirement by the Arkansas Department of Environmental Quality. They're the ones who issued the permit, and this was the first and so far the only permit issued under the Regulation 6 requirements, and that regulation does not require notification of neighboring landowners, unlike the other more common Regulation 5 permit.
Several coalition members have petitioned the Arkansas Department of Pollution Control and Ecology to fix those regulations. Sitting outside the Gilbert Cafe after the media float, Alice Andrews with Ozark Society says preserving the river is critical.
The Ozark Society and the Arkansas Public Policy Panel filed a petition with Pollution Control and Ecology Commission to initiate third-party rulemaking, which will affect Regulations 5 and 6, and it would basically prevent any more CAFOs that are medium or large size in the Buffalo River watershed.
In the interim, PCNE issued a six-month moratorium on CAFO construction on the Buffalo National River. A public hearing on the matter will be held June 17th in Harrison. Public comment due July 1st. A decision expected by the end of the year with additional review. CNH Hog Farms is among 200 swine farms operating in Arkansas. And according to ADEQ, swine farms previous to the new CAFO rule could have an unlimited number of hogs. The agency does not maintain a tally or range, but a look at two records indicate one farm in Washington County has nearly 7,000 swine, another on Benton County, 9,000. As for corporate pork, Smithfield is the fattest, followed by Tyson Foods, Swift, then Cargill, CNH's integrator. In an email correspondence for this story, a Cargill spokesperson said, while there are no plans to grow its hog operations in Arkansas, farm consolidations should be expected. And Cargill also said no more swine CAFOs are planned for the Buffalo National River watershed. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. It is June 6th, 2014, National Donut Day. Here with me is Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers. Did you know that?
No, and thank goodness. I'm dieting.
It is National Donut Day.
It's kind of funny that we're going to talk about a love story about tomatoes. No donuts.
Okay. I'll take a tomato over a donut any day.
Really?
Oh, I love tomatoes.
Well, I love tomatoes too, but not over a donut. That's yeah. Why I'm round and he's not. Do you know Marietta Baltz that used to work on campus? She was in the education department, and her husband retired after 23 years as a mental health counselor at OGC, mm-hmm. at Ozark Guidance. And they are on, well, not they, but their gardener on Saturdays through the Garden Gate Garden Tour.
Oh, okay.
They met 45 years ago, and the first thing they talked about were the tomatoes that she was growing. Mm. And here they are with this huge vegetable garden in which she has one tiny plot. And the rest of it's his. He's been retired for 10 years longer than she has, and he's become kind of a garden fanatic.
Well, I can see, because I have a first ever garden this year.
Do
that
you?
Has produced a strawberry so far and some squash.
Oh.
But I see now how you can become quite obsessed. However, when the insects start coming, then I might lose this obsession, because then it turns into frustration. But right now it's all good.
Well, plus he tries to do organic gardening.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing.
But they have everything in the garden that you could really need to eat all summer. You might throw a little tuna in with it. They have all kinds of lettuces and corn and tomatoes and oregano and parsley and thyme and garlic. And
how big is this garden?
Oh, it's probably, let me do a little quick math. It's probably 20 feet across.
Okay.
And maybe 30 feet long.
Raised beds?
No.
In
plain
the
old garden.
Okay.
And then she has her little corner where she grows the herbs she wants to cook with, so she doesn't have to climb over all of his stuff to get to what she wants. And then they plant green beans really late, which
I
thought was interesting.
I've heard of people doing this.
And then you harvest in the fall and freeze them.
So we can come and look at their garden?
And figure out, he'll talk to you about anything. What I thought was interesting is that he has this thing for figs.
Okay.
He grew up in Northeast Arkansas, and his grandfather raised figs.
I would never think of growing figs.
And so he has all these fig bushes.
Really?
They eat them in salads. They eat them fresh with a little bit of cheese and a little bit of prosciutto. They freeze them and eat them with almonds. It's a big fig thing, and he'll be happy to tell you all about figs.
Okay.
This happens from 9 to 4 on Saturday. It benefits the Botanical Garden of the Ozarks and the Flower Garden and Nature Society of Northwest Arkansas. There are 6 homes on the tour, and you can get your tickets $12 in advance at the Botanical Garden or Westwood Gardens, or $15 on Saturday. You can find out more at 935-3068.
Is this like one of those house tours that's kind of self-guided? You go as you want?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Now, if you're in the Benton County part of our listening area, the Bella Vista Garden Club is also having a Bloomin' Good Walk from 9 to 4 on Saturday to help people figure out how to deal with the rocky soil of Bella Vista, which I need to know because I'm moving there. So this year, the garden will include 6 residential gardens, a garden center, and a meet and eat stop. And you can find out more about that at 268-4313.
Is that Saturday as well?
That's Saturday as well.
Does it work out where you could do both?
If you hurried.
Okay.
You could start at 9 one place or the other and wrap up by 4.
Oh, yeah.
So sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Also this weekend, there's an art market on the Bentonville Square that's part of First Friday but continues into Saturday morning. And it has lots of goodies, including White Iris Jewelry by Delaine Cox, who I adore. That's 5 to 8 to 9 and 10 to 1:15 tomorrow.
1:15. Okay.
I don't know.
It's like a bonus 15 minutes.
I guess so. Maybe there's a 15-minute pause in there somewhere.
Yeah. Hello.
Tomorrow is also Fun Day that the Sources for Community Independent Living Service hosts at Prairie Creek Park for folks with disabilities.
Fun.
That's 11 to 3. It's fun, and there's boating and food, and it's free, and it would be good. War Eagle Appreciation Day is tomorrow from 11 to 4 at Withrow Spring State Park.
An underrated park, I might add.
And tomorrow evening is the documentary debut of Eureka, The Art of Being.
And is this taking place at
lots of familiar faces at 7 o'clock at the City Auditorium.
Fun.
Also free.
Free?
And, yeah.
Okay.
And if you thought metal was just for kids, well, no, you were wrong. Vore is celebrating their 20th anniversary tomorrow night with a concert at 8:30 at George's. Still angry after all these years.
But you know what? I used to co-host the North Arkansas Music Awards, and the guys in that band are at least based on my kind of interaction with them at those things, sweethearts.
Oh, they are.
They're great guys.
They are.
I hope that doesn't ruin their...
I hope it doesn't either.
Really, good guys. How about that?
Yeah. I mean, we may have just blown that form.
Right.
A lot of the original members are going to be back. And it's a $5 cover to see, I think, four other bands and their 20th anniversary show.
Well, good for them. All right. That's a good weekend. Becca Martin Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
I bet you never heard of self-healing concrete.
There's bacteria that are put inside the concrete, and they can lie dormant for 50 years.
I'm Ira Flatow. Join me on Science Friday as we talk about the amazing materials around us. Plus, will the EPA's climate plan lead to real environmental change? All on Science Friday from PRI.
Stay tuned to KUAF. Today's Science Friday begins next after Ozarks at Large at 1 on 91.3 FM.
This is Ozarks at Large. Caroline Rose is one of more than 150 musical acts performing at Wakarusa Music Festival this week. En route to Mulberry Mountain, Caroline, along with her bandmates Jared Coons and Pat Melvin, stopped by the Furman Garner Performance Studio to talk to Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda. During their conversation, Antoinette asked about Caroline's description of herself on her website, which includes the phrase, failed architect, failed employee, halfway decent musician.
I got a scholarship to study architecture and was going to do that, and then got really disillusioned with that. And then I worked at a farm, and then I worked at a cider distillery. Good jobs, but it wasn't a good fit at the time, I think. And then I worked in a little grocery store in New York, and then I got fired from that. And then I just sort of started wandering around, and music just sort of happened to be at the right place at the right time. Jer and I had been making records for probably 3 years already at that point, and we were just doing them for fun. And then we made this one record called America Religious that I'd sort of compiled after just wandering around for a really long time. And so we made that, and it seemed to get a little bit of traction. And then we did a Kickstarter campaign and raised a bunch of money and got some more traction from that. And then I started doing house concerts. And then we started getting a bunch of house concerts and ended up doing a giant loop around the U.S. And then it just sort of took off from there. So it was a very grassroots effort, and it just seems to be going well. So.
And how long has that been now? How many years has that been?
One.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
You seem like you've accomplished a lot in just a year.
Yeah. I'm still kind of in a dream state, I think. Yeah, I'm still waking up to that, how much we've done.
Yeah. Well, how did the three of you meet?
We met on Craigslist.
We don't know each other.
We just met today, actually.
Oh, okay.
No, I met Caroline. I was playing as a solo artist, and she was a student opener. And I didn't expect very much. And then, 5 seconds into her first song, I was pacing in the back of the room with my hand on my head, how can I follow her? She's so much better than me. And then she sent me an email a couple days later and was like, wow, I really thought you were going to be terrible, but you are great. And I wrote back, ditto. And we started making records together.
Snobby musicians find each other.
We started making these kind of casual recordings together in Vermont, where I live and have a studio there, in 2009. And, just kind of kept at it.
Yeah. I'd been making music for a long time. It was always a personal thing for me. And I started out street busking when I was 15 or 16. So it wasn't as if I had just started playing and writing songs.
Sure.
I've only been doing it about a year professionally. And we found Pat. He plays this thing called Honky Tonk Tuesdays.
Yeah, they picked me up at a bar. That's pretty much exactly how it happened.
You just look so scrumptious.
Oh, that's sweet of you to say.
It's very easy to persuade you.
No, it wasn't that easy. They came up and said, hey, do you want to play with us? And I was like, no, I don't. I don't know you guys. I've never heard the music. And Jared was like, well, why don't you listen to the album? And if you still don't want to do it, then that'd be great. Don't do it. So he sent me the album, and I listened to it, and I was like, oh, this is pretty good. I should probably do it.
I should probably put everything else on hold.
I wish we had met you sooner, but then we would have no way of wooing you without the record. Because Jer and I did most of the parts on the record ourselves. Mm-hmm. And Jer runs a studio in Burlington, Vermont, where we're based out of. And we had another guy to come in and fly in some upright bass parts, who was not Pat.
No, he's not. I have his bass at my house, though, which is a funny side note. He still owns it.
Oh.
He just doesn't play it that much.
They have shared custody.
That happens sometimes with insurance. Well, in reading a little bit about you online, I read that you really enjoy traveling around the country. When did you sort of first realize that that was something that you like to do? When did you kind of realize you had this passion for, you know, getting out there and wandering about?
I was pretty much raised that way. My parents are both, they're both wanderlust type people. And my sister and I started traveling when we were really young. When we were babies, our parents would just drag us along everywhere. And my mom is the type of, they're both artists. And my mom is the type of person that she just knows how to save money and find deals and stuff. So we would travel a lot. And most of the stuff that we did, we would go to different national parks around the U.S. So by the time I was a teenager, I had seen most of the country already, and that just sort of transpired into my own life. And now I just do that all the time. I live out of a van most of the time, or just on friends' sofas, and then I just write. Really inspirational moving around. It makes my brain kind of just take off, and so I have all these thoughts when I'm moving, and that's definitely where most of the songs come from. And you're meeting people, you're seeing new things. It like keeps you active, makes me feel alive, and I hope that comes through in the songs, that it's not just songs about joy, but songs about struggles and things that I've dealt with and people that I've met. And a lot of that comes from just being in random places and meeting random people and doing random things.
Your most recent album is American Religious, as we mentioned. It's got 12 songs on it. Can you talk to me a little bit about the title track? Was it inspired by your wandering about the country?
Yeah, totally. That's sort of a... I'm like a vision-induced, definitely a wanderlust song. A lot of my songs have to do with being disillusioned. And that's probably partly as to why it took me so long to do this as a profession, just because I never wanted to start hating it because it was a job for me. It was something that I had to do rather than that I needed to do for myself. And a lot of the failed attempts that I had at other things were just ended in feeling disillusionment. Whether it was, the architecture thing didn't work out because I was designing stuff for people who I couldn't relate to. You know, it felt like you were making. All your ideas were going to the, top tier of society who I have, no direct contact with at all, and it felt like a waste of time. And a lot of the stuff that I have done has sort of ended that way, just being disappointed, whether it's about politics or religion or friends and family. There's so much of that that is so – it's so saturated in life. That we almost become numb to it. And that song in particular is about just being a young person and trying to find some sort of place in this country that everyone has become so numb to all these things that we don't even talk about them anymore or even notice them because they become so ingrained in just normal life.
Jer, I know you also worked on this album. What kind of input did you have on it? Is there a particular song that you were instrumental in, or how did that partnership kind of work?
With America Religious, Caroline wrote all the songs and arranged all the songs, and we tracked it at my studio and co-produced it. And the two of us are playing pretty much all the instruments. So between the two of us, we're playing drums and mandolin, guitars, lap steel, mm-hmm. bass, percussion. And I think I'm just kind of there as a sideman and an enabler in a way. She'll come in with an idea or have a pretty fully baked song, and then we'll just kind of hash it out. With that record, she would take a guitar, and I would usually sit at the drums, and we just kind of bash around until it felt right, and it was kind of the right tempo and the right feel. And then we just kind of lay that down and build the song around the skeleton that we cut live. So yeah, I'm usually just sitting on the on the other side of the glass for things like that?
Usually, it was pretty much whoever got to the, an instrument first would lay down a part. And, like, if I had something in my head, then I'd go and just play it and track it. And, you know, most nights we just slept in the studio and woke up and played a bunch of parts and then went out and then would come back and do the same thing. So it was kind of a scrappy way of recording. But now listening back on the record, I'm so proud of it that we did it that way. And I'm kind of a... I don't like too many cooks in the kitchen, so Jer and I work really well together when we can just go in, and I know what I want before I go in, and I can just sort of tell him, like, I want it to sound like this. And he kind of helps me get the sound to where I want it to be. And it's just the two of us, and, you know, now we've got Pat, who's just such a great addition in this record that we just made that'll be out in August. It was even easier than America Religious because we just went in and I had a bunch of demos for the songs and we learned the parts and just played as much as we could live. And that's just how it happened. Yeah, it's usually a very organic process.
On your Facebook page, I noticed a picture of a library back in February where you made this remark that you know, the best song you'd written to date. Do you normally write in libraries?
You did your research.
I did. Do you normally write in libraries or?
No. I mean, I write anywhere. I just like the library because it's free and, sure. You know, it has public bathrooms and stuff and it's quiet. I think that day I was just traveling on my own, and I stopped in Boston, and that was in the Southie Library, and I was just walking around, and I had an idea in my head, and so I sat down. I had been walking all day, too, because my feet were really tired. And so I sat down in the library, and for someone who never has a ton of money to spend, the library is awesome because you never have to leave. and I think I just sat down and wrote this song without any instrumentation or anything like that. A lot of them, I'll just hear the parts in my head, and so I can just write down the words with the part playing as I'm writing. And that one I actually haven't even played yet on an instrument. I was just really excited about it because I thought it was a really good song.
But it didn't make it to the new album?
Well, I wrote it after we had recorded the new album.
Okay.
I'm already ready for album number 17. Like, I'm ready. Business moves really slow, much slower than art does. So I'm kind of working at a fast pace. But it is what it is, I guess.
Yeah. Well, what can we expect from the new album that's coming out later this year?
I listened to a bunch of different styles of music, and this last, America Religious, is... a lot of my favorite classic songwriters that I was kind of pulling inspiration from, or, you know, there's some alternative stuff on there. There's, like, a lot of gospel-influenced stuff. This one, I think, there's definitely some folk rock and roll. I really love surf rock, so there's, like, some elements of surf rock on there. Rockabilly, I love. So, and I also really like Western soundtracks, like the old spaghetti Western, and like Ennio Morricone, and that type of stuff. So there's influences of that. It's kind of all that stuff mushed together. But I'm definitely excited that we've got a full band now, and we can kind of start making bigger noises. So even the record after this one coming out, you know, I want to move in that direction, just kind of experiment with different sounds, try and get some bigger sounds, and make sure. I just want all my records to sound a little bit different. You know, I don't want to repeat any steps that I've already taken.
The current album is American Religious. We can expect a new one later this year. Is there a name for it yet?
Yeah, it's called I Will Not Be Afraid.
Okay, and if people want to keep up with when that's going to be released or anything else, what is the website?
CarolineRoseMusic.com.
Okay. Well, would you guys like to play something for us?
Yeah.
So this song is called This Is What Living Feels Like, and it goes like this.
Thank you. sipping on a stolen nip, stacked up on my Hulk cigarettes. I know someone needing a fix. Got into New York City, the rest of dollar piece. I pay my way down the Natchez Trace to New Orleans. Ain't getting any younger, boy, I'm tired of feeling alone. I pay a smile to the prettiest side in my rear view, the backlit city skyline. Oh, baby, this is what living feels like. Houston, pick a bypass this town, cause Johnny's got a split with my name on it. In Austin, where everybody's hip, honey, I guess I'll have my all I want. A cowboy to lead me in some honky-tonk dive, a juke joint dive like poor monkeys to cornhouse through Redmond Aiken. Two left turns off Highway 60, well, I'm keeping this road hiding till she drives black top in the back. My finest bottle of scotch, top down in the valley, feeling all right on stereo, feeling like I could dance all night. Misty white sand beach, a whisper, cloudy hair and sun golden teeth. I feel the pulse of everything from my head down to my feet. Every heart left in the world beating within me. I'm in love with his life. I flirt with time to buy more words, mine, so rightfully mine. Just my little piece of the pie. If I'm going now, then I'm going out in style. Oh, say what you will, say what you like. It's another broken down beat in the heart of big sky.
That was Caroline Rose, Jer Koons, and Pat Melvin inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio. They performed last night at Wakarusa Music Festival. More information about the band available at carolinerosemusic.com. KUAF is supported by Urban Jungle Tropical Plant Care and Rental, offering a variety of indoor plants and planters for home or commercial spaces. Urban Jungle serves Benton and Washington counties with maintenance-free, month-to-month care and services. More information at 466-5033. Fort Smith's Riverfront Blues Festival celebrates its 24th year with headliners Paul Thorne, Little Ed, and the Blues Imperials June 20th and 21st at Harry E. Kelly Park in downtown Fort Smith. Other performers include Samantha Fish, Blind Boy Paxton, Jigsaw Mudd, and more. Tickets and more information available at riverfrontbluesfest.org. And KUAF is supported by the fully remodeled and expanded Walmart Museum, a family-friendly experience featuring interactive displays on the history of Walmart, Walton's Five and Dime, and the Spark Cafe Soda Fountain. Located on the square in downtown Bentonville and open daily until 9 p.m., including Sundays, 277-8493 or facebook.com/Walmart Museum for more information. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, Hackett. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks so much for all the work done since early this morning by Antoinette Grajeda and Timothy Dennis to bring us coverage of the Walmart Shareholder 2014 meeting. I'll be back Sunday all by myself. Antoinette has the show on Monday. More brand new Ozarks at Large ahead. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great Friday.